Welcome to this deep dive. In this lesson, we're exploring communication, influence, and relationship building. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now, let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill.
Sounds good. I'm excited to get into this one.
Yeah, me too. Because, you know, right now, you are probably spending hours mastering Python or financial modeling or whatever technical skill is hot in your industry right now.
Right.
But statistically, the number one reason you will stall out in your career or miss a promotion or even get fired has absolutely nothing to do with your technical ability.
It's true. It is a really harsh reality check for a lot of people entering the workforce. Because we spend, you know, years getting certified in all these hard skills, but the digitally enabled future we're heading into, it demands a completely different baseline.
Yeah, those technical skills are just the baseline.
Exactly. They might get you an interview, but your trajectory is entirely dictated by your human skills. So the materials we're looking at today, they lay down some critical definitions to frame this. Like, professional communication isn't about sounding like a thesaurus.
Thank goodness.
Right. It's communication that is clear, respectful, and purposeful. It always has an objective. And then there's influence, which is specifically defined here as positively guiding ideas, discussions, and decisions.
Positively guiding. I like that distinction.
Yes. And finally, relationship building, which essentially acts as the mechanism to build trust and unlock actual real-world opportunities.
You know, I keep visualizing this whole concept as an operating system.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, like your coding skills, your design talent, your data analysis. Those are the apps on your computer.
Okay, yep.
But if your communication OS is buggy, none of those really expensive apps are going to run smoothly. Like, your brilliant data analysis gets completely lost because you just can't explain it clearly to a stakeholder who doesn't understand the jargon.
That is spot on. And to push that OS analogy just a step further, think about active listening.
Okay.
Active listening is essentially your system's RAM. If you aren't holding on to what the other person is saying, processing their input in real time, your whole system just freezes up.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because most people aren't actually actively listening, are they?
No, they're not. They are just waiting for their turn to speak.
Guilty.
We all do it. They're running this background process, formulating their response, which, you know, drains their cognitive resources and causes them to miss the actual nuance of the conversation.
Right. And when your OS can't process that input, communication just breaks down entirely.
Exactly. And the text highlights how this creates a kind of cascading series of failures. Misunderstandings immediately degrade trust.
And without trust, you have nothing.
Right. Reduced trust leads to ineffective teamwork, which then breeds conflict, and ultimately it costs you opportunities.
Okay, so if a buggy OS leads to total system failure, how do we actually upgrade it? Because the material emphasizes adapting our communication style to different audiences.
Yeah.
Like, talking to peers in a study group is obviously entirely different from presenting to a senior executive.
Which, by the way, is a highly strategic tool for personal productivity.
Yeah.
Adapting your style isn't about, you know, being fake or changing your personality.
Sure.
It is about understanding the environment your OS is currently running in. A good operating system adapts to the hardware.
Makes sense.
And this ties directly into how we define influence. People usually mistake influence for being the loudest voice in the room or possessing this, like, magnetic charisma.
Yeah, the typical extrovert stereotype.
Exactly. But the lesson grounds influence in two highly specific requirements: credibility and respect. You literally cannot positively guide a team's ideas if they don't believe you are credible.
Right.
And you certainly won't guide them if they feel disrespected by your delivery.
That makes total sense in a physical boardroom. But, I mean, we are living in a digital world now. The physical cues are completely gone. And the material explicitly brings up digital tools like Zoom, Canva, and LinkedIn.
It does.
So how do we adapt this operating system when we're just staring at a screen?
Yeah.
Let's start with video calls because, frankly, it can feel like a diagnostic nightmare.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't tell if someone is confused, angry, or just, you know, reading an email on their second monitor.
Yeah, you are operating in really muddy waters there. Which means your active listening has to be incredibly intentional.
Intentional how?
Well, without physical proximity, a slight lag or a microphone on mute can create immediate misunderstandings, right? You almost have to overcompensate.
Oh, I see.
Active listening on a video call means visibly nodding. It means utilizing the chat function to validate a colleague's point while someone else is speaking.
Right, leaving a digital paper trail of your listening.
Exactly. It means structuring your verbal feedback so clearly that it simply cannot be misinterpreted, even over a spotty Wi-Fi connection.
So you really have to leave absolutely no room for ambiguity.
Zero room.
Okay, what about Canva? I found it so fascinating that a graphic design tool was listed right alongside Zoom and LinkedIn in a communication lesson.
Well, it goes back to that core definition of professional communication being clear and purposeful.
Uh-huh.
We are visual creatures.
Very true.
If you throw a 10-page dense text document at a client or a manager to explain a complex new concept, you aren't communicating effectively. You are essentially asking them to do your communication work for you.
Ouch. Yeah, that's a good point.
But using a tool like Canva to create a visual hierarchy, to map out those complex ideas cleanly, that is a profound act of professional respect.
Because it saves them time.
Yes, it shows you value your audience's time and you are actively trying to reduce their cognitive load. You organize the information so their OS can process it smoothly.
Visual clarity as a form of respect. I really like that framing.
It changes how you see slide decks, doesn't it?
It really does. And then there's LinkedIn, which is supposed to be the engine for relationship building. But let's be real for a second here.
Let's do it.
When someone messages me on LinkedIn out of absolutely nowhere saying, "I love your work, let's connect," I immediately assume they want to sell me something or they want to ask for a job.
True.
So when we start talking about having networking goals and leveraging influence, how do we do this without being a total sleazeball? I mean, it can feel incredibly manipulative.
And that is the most common trap of the digital age. It raises a really vital point about the ethical responsibility of communication.
Yeah, because it feels so transactional.
Exactly. The speed of digital connection makes it very easy to treat people like transactions. But if you approach a relationship solely to extract value, if your hidden agenda is just to get a referral, people sense that instantly.
Oh, for sure.
And then the trust drops to zero.
And as we just established earlier, without trust, the communication fails entirely. Right. System crash.
Exactly. System crash. This is why we have to anchor ourselves to the lesson's definition. Influence is about positively guiding ideas. True professional credibility relies fundamentally on mutual respect.
Mutual respect. Okay.
Responsible use of these platforms means seeking mutual benefit. When you reach out to a professional online, it should be driven by genuine curiosity about their field, not just a masked request for a favor.
Right. You can't just be out for yourself.
No, because if your outreach isn't rooted in a respectful appreciation of their expertise, it leads straight back to those pitfalls we mentioned, a ruined reputation and burned bridges.
I want to picture this entire system, you know, the active listening, the respect, the influence under extreme pressure. Because the text provides this great case study of a student who dramatically improved their internship opportunities by applying these skills during messy university projects.
Yes, that's a great example.
So let's make this gritty. Let's say the student is in a mandatory group project. It's on video chat. One person is completely dominating the conversation, just talking over everyone, and another person has their camera off and is totally disengaged. It is a total disaster.
We have all been in that exact meeting.
Right. How does this student actually use these concepts to fix it?
Well, usually people respond to that scenario in one of two ways. They either mute themselves and let the dominator take over just to get the project done and over with.
Yep, the avoidance route.
Or they snap at them, which causes a defensive argument.
The aggressive route.
Right, and both options crash the system. Our student, however, applies the mechanics of influence. They don't just interrupt the dominator. They use a validation technique.
Okay, how did that work?
They step in and say something like, "John, your point about the timeline is really critical. Let's hold that thought because I'd love to hear how Sarah thinks we can apply that timeline to the research phase."
Ah, so they use that yes and framework. They validate the person dominating the conversation so they don't feel attacked, but then they actively pull the silent partner into the mix.
They positively guide the discussion back to the objective. They manage the conflict without ever raising their voice.
Wow.
They are utilizing active listening to catch the specific details of what the dominator is saying, and they are demonstrating respect to both parties simultaneously.
Okay, so they just saved the group project. That's great. But how does being a good referee translate into a tangible internship opportunity.
It translates through consistent follow-up. Let's say a guest speaker attended one of those project presentations. Our student doesn't just hit connect on LinkedIn and leave it at that.
No random connection request.
Exactly. They write a highly purposeful message. They reference a specific insight the speaker shared during the presentation and briefly mention how their team applied it.
Oh, that's smart.
They aren't asking for a job. They are building the relationship by showing they actively listened and respected the speaker's time.
They're proving their OS works.
Exactly. So when an internship eventually opens up at that company months later, the speaker already has a documented history of this student's credibility, communication skills, and respectfulness.
That is powerful.
It really is. The tangible takeaway for you, listening right now, is that these are not soft, nice-to-have traits. The ability to manage messy human dynamics directly unlocks real-world career mobility.
So if I want to actually build this into my daily life, I need a strategy. Because I can tell you from personal experience, I tried networking last year, and it was incredibly scattered.
It usually is for most people.
Yeah, I would send random messages, get totally overwhelmed, and just give up. And on video calls, my biggest flaw is that I cannot stand silence. I always jump in and fill the dead air. I clearly need a better system.
Well, what you are describing is exactly why the source material insists on developing a structured professional communication plan. It demystifies the whole process.
Okay, so how do I build one?
This isn't about changing who you are or suddenly forcing yourself to be this massive extrovert. It's about adopting specific, learnable habits across four distinct pillars. So, to solve your scattered networking issue, you need to establish the first pillar, clear networking goals.
So, not just, I want to reach 500 connections on LinkedIn.
Precisely. A targeted goal looks more like, I want to connect with 3 junior analysts in the renewable energy sector this month to understand the daily realities of their role.
Oh, I see.
It gives your outreach purpose and keeps you from feeling overwhelmed.
Okay, that fixes the who. But what about my issue with filling dead air on calls?
That falls under the second pillar, communication improvement priorities. And this requires brutal self-awareness.
Which is never fun.
No, it isn't. But you've already identified your weak spot. If you know you rush to fill silence, your targeted priority is to practice the pause. Your actionable habit is to literally count to 3 in your head before responding on your next video call.
Ugh, it sounds excruciating.
It will feel so uncomfortable at first, but you are intentionally patching a bug in your operating system.
It's excruciating, but you're right. It forces me to actually process what they said instead of just reacting.
Exactly.
Now, what happens after I make the connection? I am notoriously bad at keeping in touch.
Well, that is the third pillar, relationship building strategies, the maintenance phase.
The maintenance, okay.
A connection degrades over time if it isn't maintained. You need a system for consistent follow-ups. And this doesn't mean scheduling weekly coffee chats.
Good, because nobody has time for that.
No. It can be as simple as saving an industry article and sending it to a former professor or colleague 3 months later with a quick note saying, thought of our conversation when I read this.
Oh, that's easy.
It shows consistent respect and keeps the relationship warm without being transactional. It's also about learning how to deliver constructive feedback to your peers in a way that builds trust rather than tearing it down.
Okay, so I have my networking goals, my personal improvement priority, and my maintenance strategy. But I know that no matter how good my plan is, things are going to go sideways eventually.
They always do.
Which brings us to the final pillar. And probably the most intimidating one, conflict management approaches.
Right. No one likes conflict, but treading to avoid it entirely is a terrible strategy. Avoidance breeds resentment, which eventually causes a massive system failure. Your plan needs to outline how you will respond when disagreements inevitably arise, because they will.
So it's about deciding your reaction in advance.
Exactly.
Like telling yourself, if I receive a really passive-aggressive email from a vendor, I will not fire off a reply immediately. I will step away for an hour, and I will default to a phone call to clear up the nuance instead of getting to a text-based argument.
That is a perfect protocol. You are putting protocols in place so that when the pressure spikes, you don't default to emotional reactions. You default to your professional communication plan.
That makes a lot of sense.
And, you know, introverts often make the absolute best communicators because they naturally lean toward active listening and careful observation. Anyone can master these four pillars if they treat them like a technical skill that requires actual practice.
Writing it all out like that really does take the anxiety out of it. It turns a vague concept like networking into a concrete, actionable checklist.
That's the goal.
So as we step back to look at the ultimate goal of all these practices, the source material leaves us with a specific reflection prompt. I want to pose this directly to you listening right now to mull over as you navigate your week. How can communication and relationship building improve my future career opportunities?
And if I can offer just a final thought on that prompt, we are living through an era of unprecedented digital transformation.
We really are. Things are moving so fast.
They are. The hard technical skills you are spending hours learning today might be obsolete in 5 years. Software paradigms shift, algorithms evolve, and automation replaces routine tasks. But your ability to build genuine trust, to collaborate effectively across a digital divide, to navigate messy human conflict gracefully, and to positively influence the people around you, that is your most adaptable and future-proof skill. It is the one layer of the operating system that will never be automated.
The human element really is the ultimate future-proof skill. We want to encourage you to stay curious, remain responsible in how you use these digital platforms, and stay future ready. Please remember to review the end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities associated with this lesson. They are specifically designed to help you build out that four-pillar professional communication plan we just discussed.
Absolutely. And for those who want to master the underlying psychology of these concepts, the lesson materials explicitly highlight three foundational texts that are highly recommended.
Yes, these are the gold standard for a reason. You will want to look at How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, published in 1936, Crucial Conversations by Carrie Patterson and Colleagues, published in 2002, and Emotional Intelligence by Daniel Goleman, published in 1995. Check those out to really take this to the next level.
They are essentially the original blueprints for building a flawless communication operating system.
Remember, no matter how incredible your technical apps are, they are only as good as the OS running them. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep refining that operating system, and we will catch you next time.